Welcome to today's edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking with Jeff Sanders about his book, The 5 a.m. Miracle, How You Can Dominate Your Day Before Breakfast. I'm looking forward to that. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Kate Barrington about the DASH Diet Detox. It's a 14-day quick start plan to help you lower your blood pressure, and I guess you're going to lose weight on the way. So, but before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
The wage gap between American women and men might be one reason why women have higher rates of depression and anxiety, a new study suggests. Women with lower income than men with similar levels of education and experience were about 2.5 times more likely to have major depression than men. But women who had incomes similar to their male counterparts didn't have a greater risk of depression than men, the research revealed. Study author Jonathan Platt, a PhD student at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health's Department of Epidemiology, said the results show that some of the gender disparities in depression and anxiety may be due to the effects of structural gender inequality in the workforce and beyond. The study was published in the January issue of the journal Social Science and Medicine. High-dose vitamin D appears safe for people with multiple sclerosis, and it may help quiet the immune system hyperactivity that marks the disease, a small clinical trial finds. The study, published online December 30th in Neurology, bolsters evidence that vitamin D might benefit people with MS. But clinical trials are still underway to answer the big question, does taking vitamin D improve MS symptoms and alter the course of the disease? The current study shows only that high doses, 10,400 international units a day, reduce the proportion of certain immune system cells that have been implicated in the MS disease process. Senior researcher Dr. Peter Calabresi, a professor of neurology at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, said he's not going to make any claims beyond that. We don't have enough data here to guide clinical practice, he added. Lifestyle changes that include a healthy diet and regular exercise appear to improve health function and exercise capacity in people with a particular form of health failure, a new study reports. Health failure with preserved ejection fraction, HFPEF, is a form of health failure that's on the rise. It most often affects overweight and obese older women. This type of health failure leads to fatigue and shortness of breath during activities, which can affect the ability to exercise, according to the study authors. The study included 100 obese older people with HFPEF. The randomized clinical trial was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. The results were published online January the 5th in the Journal of the American Medical Association. A good night's sleep can help you remember new faces and names, researchers report. The researchers showed 20 photos of faces with matching names to 14 volunteers in their 20s. 12 hours later, participants were shown the photos again and asked if the faces and names matched. The test was done twice, once after participants had slept up to 8 hours, and once with a period of regular day activities in between. After sleeping, the participants correctly matched 12% more of the faces or names. How long or how deeply volunteers slept did not influence their ability to match faces and names. But more research is needed to find out if these factors are important, according to the authors of the study, published recently in the journal Neurobiology of Learning and Memory. The study looked at young adults, but the authors want to conduct similar studies in people of all ages, including older adults.
Thanks for that, Alan. Well, our first guest is a productivity coach, a plant-based ultra-marathon runner, and the host of the 5 a.m. Miracle podcast, also the author of the 5 a.m. Miracle, Jeff Sanders. Welcome to the show. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going? So tell me a little bit about this book and why you wrote it.
Well, this book called The 5 a.m. Miracle really is about having a miracle at 5 a.m. Essentially, it's wake up really early and get a lot done is really the main idea behind it. And I wrote it because I had that same experience myself a few years ago when I was training for a marathon, and I woke up early to go train, and I realized that there's a lot of potential early in the morning to get a lot done, and I just really got addicted to it, accomplished, and that's what the book really helps people do.
What did you find, you know, when you're going out promoting this book? What time are people usually waking up now, and what's happening in the morning that really is holding them back?
I think a lot of people are getting up reasonably early, maybe between like 6 and 7. I advocate for a little bit earlier than that. 5 a.m. would be more ideal. I think a lot of people are being held back by just the thought that waking up early be too painful, or how could somebody do that? But really, waking up early is all about going to bed early. And for most people, that's actually doable. They just don't think about that process of actually stopping the day and having an evening boundary. And once that's in place and you go to bed on time, then waking up early is actually no big deal. And then you're able to wake up refreshed and ready to get a lot more done before your workday really begins.
So, Jeff, you're getting up at 5 a.m. every morning, I'm assuming, since you wrote the book. What time do you usually go to bed?
I try to get to sleep around 9:30 p.m. Sometimes it's a little later than that, around 10 p.m.
Right. And in terms of results, you said that, you know, you talk about in your book about how you were able to get more done, also have more energy. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, my mornings are really focused around having a lot of energy. That's really the intent behind it. And so the more energy that I have, the more I'm able to get done. And so for me, my morning habits are really based off of exercise, morning smoothies, lots of water, a little bit of caffeine. And the combination of all that put together allows me to have the most energy possible as my workday begins. And then I'm really able to truly dominate my day at that point. As long as I've got the energy flowing, my productivity is going to be a really like high level the entire day.
Is getting up earlier healthier for people?
Say it again?
Is getting up early, you know, earlier, or say 5 a.m. in the morning, is that a healthy thing to do in the long run?
I mean, in a long-term habit, yeah, it's a really essential one that really sticks around for a while if you make that a lifestyle. I think that once you have that in place, you really are able to have the consistency of waking up and making it work for yourself as a lifestyle that allows you to be productive long-term, as opposed to just kind of a one-time thing when you would just jump in and try it. I think that a lot of people have the tendency to say, well, I'll get a shot one day, but this really is a transition to get there, and then once you're there, it really does stick long-term and allow you to get those repeated benefits over and over as long as those habits are in place.
You have a seven-step system for extraordinary productivity that starts at 5 a.m. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, in the book, I outline my seven steps, which is called the 5 a.m. Blueprint. And really what this does is allows you to restructure your life and your productivity systems in a way that is all focused on your grandest long-term goals. And so if you're able to kind of think forward and say, well, let's say at the end of the year or in the next few months, you know, I want to run a marathon, then you would backtrack and say, well, then how am I going to structure the next few weeks and then the next week coming up and the next few days? And by the time you've really put in all the right, you know, strategies and the right systems, you're able to say, well, then tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm going to go work on this very next step in that process. And knowing that that morning has been well thought out, it's very intentional, and that those activities are going to actually lead towards the accomplishment of those longer goals you're working towards, which really allows you to live kind of your best life because you're always working on your next highest and most important goals.
How do people decide, you know, when they're thinking about goals, how do people decide what goals they should be setting or you know, are there some ways that people can go about setting goals that is really productive?
It's a great question. I think that a lot of people don't really know how to set goals. And the way that I look at it is, you know, what is it that you want in your life? What is it you've been, you know, not getting that you would like to have? And for most people, the goals really fall into a couple of categories. It's like health and fitness or career and business. And those tend to be kind of the two most common. And so I say that look at those areas of your life. You know, how is your career doing? What could it become? How is your health today? You know, how could you improve that? Or just what is something you've been looking forward to having at some point in your life that you just don't have yet? And just make that your actual tangible goal to go get it. And I think that once you put that on paper and write it down and say, this is what I'm going to go attempt to get, then you can actually break down that process. Well, what would I do first? What would I do second? And the process of going through that, thinking through the goal and writing down all the steps to get there makes it so much more tangible, so much more real. And then from there, you're able to actually put a schedule to it and actually make progress towards it. And then these kind of longer-term bucket list fantasies become actual goals that you can truly make progress towards and then realistically actually achieve.
Now, you talked about bucket list fantasies. So what is the difference between a bucket list fantasy and a goal?
Well, the way I describe it in the book is that a bucket list fantasy actually is just going to stay as a fantasy for your entire life. So I might say, for example, one of my bucket list goals is to climb Mount Everest. But realistically, I'm not working towards that right now. And so if I were to set a goal, I might say, well, there's a mountain that I want to climb in the Rocky Mountains that I'm actually going to go attempt to climb, you know, in 6 months. Like, that would be a goal because I'm actually going to try to do it. I'm going to make a plan for it. I'm going to work towards it. And I'm going to make sure it happens. And then the bucket list of Mount Everest may come around a few years from now, but it's still just kind of on the fringe, and I'm not actively working towards it, versus saying there's a specific thing I'm going to achieve in the near term that I can actually make progress towards.
So what happens between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. when most people get up, if, you know, in terms of these goals?
Well, the way that I look at it is that you have those couple of hours, let's say, to structure your morning routine, and you can pick like a theme for your morning. So some days for me is health and fitness, and I'll have energy-focused goals like exercise. And other days I might say, well, if I have this goal, let's say I'm going to write a book or I'm going to build a business or whatever it is you're going to choose to do, you can wake up at 5 a.m. and then spend a good hour and a half to 2 hours just making direct progress towards that before you actually go through, you know, you're preparing for work for the day. And so really, if you're asking yourself, well, how can I make the most of my mornings? Well, then create a focus block of time in that morning where you're going to work exclusively on one important thing. And then that routine becomes this really ingrained habit of waking up and doing something that matters. And so that time can be used however you want. But I think the best thing to do is be intentional, have a plan on paper of how you're going to optimize that time.
Jeff, in terms of blocks of time, how long do we need to get, you know, to be working on things? Is it a matter of having that 2 hours, or are we talking blocks of 15 minutes or a half hour? Or?
I think for me, the most ideal time I've had in the past is when I have a longer chunk of time. So when I wrote this book, for example, I had between 3 and 4 hour blocks of time where I was working, and that was kind of like during the workday. Mm-hmm. In the morning, the block of time could be shorter. Like if you're going to meditate, for example, that could be a 10-minute block of time. Versus, say, I'm going to, you know, write in my journal, or versus I'm going to read a book for 30 minutes. So the block of time, the length can change, but the important part is to give yourself a focus block where you're not going to be distracted, where you have the opportunity to actually make tangible progress on that goal you're working on.
Jeff, tell us about the 4 different types of morning routines.
Well, there's a lot of different ways you can structure your routines. One of the best ways, the types of routines, would be like the real fast action. If you've got to, you know, get out the door really quickly. I think most people, that's the morning routine that they operate off of. I know my wife does the exact same thing, where you wake up at the last minute and have a really fast, efficient routine, and you're out the door. Versus a longer routine, the one that I kind of lean towards, one where you have a little bit of extra flexibility. So you might say, instead of 30 minutes of wake up and move real fast, I'll give myself an hour and a half of a little bit more flexibility, a little more time to work through the day, and I'll have the ability to think with a little more clarity. I like the longer routines like that. That tends to be how I operate. There's other ways you can structure your routine. You can even have a super long period routine I've had in the past where your routine literally stretches out to 3 or 4 hours. In that case, you'd have to have a later start time to your day and much earlier wake-up call. And those are ideal for, let's say, a weekend where you might wake up at 5 a.m. on a Saturday morning and you'd go for a long run before you begin the day's activities. And so there's a variety of lengths to choose from. But really the question is, you know, what's ideal for your schedule? When does your actual day begin? When do you leave the house? And then when do you wake up in the morning? What time is ideal for that? And the gap between when you wake up and when you have to kind of leave the house for the day, that's your block of time, and that's your routine. That's what you have to work with. And so what's ideal in that time period for you? And like I said, that time can flex. It can be longer or shorter. But the real key is to ask yourself, How can I really make progress in my most important goals? And how long should the routine be to make sure there's enough space there to make that progress?
We're talking with Jeff Sanders. We're talking about his book, The 5 a.m. Miracle, How to Dominate Your Day Before Breakfast, Maximize Your Productivity, Be a Rockstar at Work, Slash the To-Do List, Perfect Your Schedule, and Make Time for Fun. But we're going to talk to him some more. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break.